Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
So every so often in sports, you get one of those moments. One of those moments where you just say, holy crap. Last night, one of those moments went down in Cameron Indoor. Duke was hosting Stephen F. Austin, and it went down in the most dramatic way possible. In a tie game in OT, the Lumberjacks battling like crazy on defense. They get the ball, and they do this.
They'll start him again down the right side. Bounce it down low, knocked away by Ware. It's loose. David Kinsmill comes up with it. Here's Bain on the other end. Bain on the breakaway. Bain on the dunk and the buzzer. Lumberjacks win! The Jacks have just beaten Duke at the buzzer. 85-83. SFA has knocked off the number one team in the country.
Stephen F. Austin Radio. Nathan Bain. Nathan Bain, Stephen F. Austin, raise the axe. Shout out to the legend, Thomas Walkup. I mean, hell yes, your voice is going to crack on something like that, because that's unreal. Stephen F. Austin, 85. Duke, 83. In overtime, in Cameron Indoor. There are buzzer beaters, and then there is that. What an amazing way to pull off a ridiculous upset. The ball left Bane's hand with roughly a tenth of a second left, and it goes down. Think about how ridiculous that was. 45 minutes into that game. A game where Bain had played 34 minutes. He gets the ball roughly 80 feet from the basket. He goes on a sprint. He does not call timeout. You know the guy had to be gassed. His lungs and legs burning.
Burning.
The clock is ticking down. And this guy finished the play, hailed it like an absolute legend. And the way he described it to Brendan Marks after the game made it seem way easier than it actually was.
I took a quick glance at the clock. I saw he had like 3 seconds. And I pointed, I was like, just throw it ahead. I'm going to try and chase it down. I could feel somebody on my back. But I just took another glance the whole time I was dribbling. I'm like, I got to get it up. I got to get it up. So just... like a layup drill, just put it on the glass and it's going to go in. And that's what happened. And then the rest is history. History made. You know, we did it.
You sure as hell did it, Nathan. Amazing. And I love how he described it being like a layup drill. Except that was no layup drill. No layup drill involves you trying to stay ahead of a defender with split seconds left on the clock to beat the number one team in the country and pull off the biggest win in school history. Then again, this is Nathan Bain. We're talking about the pride of Freeport, Bahamas. And in the last few hours, the world has gotten to know his story and the story of his family, a story which includes them losing nearly everything in Hurricane Dorian.
Man, it's just, I'm trying real hard not to get emotional. You know, my family lost a whole lot this year. Whew, I'm not going to cry on TV. My family lost a whole lot this year. And, you know, I'm just playing this game for them, you know? Just playing for my SFA family, my family back home in the Bahamas. You know, I just want to make my country proud. And my whole team is behind me. My other two seniors, you know, John Cramptow, but he was giving us energy. He won, provided the spark for us, you know, the team effort. You know, when everything happened early inside the year, you know, they had my back, and I just wanted to return the favor. You know?
What a moment. What a great moment. Of course, being the guy to knock off Duke does not change the pain of everything in his life or change the fact that his family lost essentially everything. But if you made a movie about last night, that'd be too much. It would be too Hollywood. Because that wasn't just an upset. That was the upset. That was as incredible an upset as you're ever going to see. That was a Tuesday night game in November. That was the 262nd team in the KenPom rankings against the number one team in the country in their house. That was such an overlooked game. It was a regional broadcast. This is Duke. They're on TV more than Leave It to Beaver reruns.
They're on TV more than Leave It to Beaver reruns.
And Beave. The Beave was probably on more TVs last night at the start of that game than Duke and Stephen F. Austin. Stephen freaking Austin. The same Stephen F. Austin that lost to Rutgers by 12 their last time out. They were a 28-point dog last night, but they came in on a mission as SFA coach. Kyle Keller said, quote, I told our players, banners can't beat us tonight. The players have to beat us, end quote. And they couldn't. Duke's banners couldn't. Duke's players couldn't. That was SFA's night. And that wasn't some underdog who came in and shot the lights out either from deep. That's supposed to be the path to an upset like that. But SFA made 2 3-pointers all night long. They weren't even on fire from the free throw line. And they were down by 15 at one point. But Keller's crew just kept working. They kept raising the axe. And they killed Duke in the paint. The Lumberjacks were doing work. 64 points in the paint. And they got after it on D. Hey, they'll turn you over. That's a fact. We know this about the Lumberjacks. They came into last night leading the nation in turnovers, and they forced Duke into 22 turnovers and multiple shot clock violations. Bain said it best, quote, "People don't like pressure. Everybody wants to be comfortable, be able to see the floor. It's a winning formula. You deny passes, you pressure the ball, you make people play one-on-one, and that's hard. You can't do that for 40 minutes. You have to have some great lungs," end quote. SFA's got great lungs and some huge heart. And Coach K said afterwards, "They were just better than we were.
This isn't just about us not showing up or whatever. They played really well." And, you know, sometimes when I'm talking about what we didn't do, I don't want to disrespect their performance. Their performance was outstanding, and they deserve their recognition for that, not that we didn't do something. They did it to us. They made us look bad.
It's a classy, classy response. That's how you handle that, because that had to be one of the most disappointing things ever. I mean, how ridiculous was that win? That's the first time Duke has lost to a non-conference opponent at home since St. John's got him back in 2000. Many of the guys playing last night weren't even born then. That was a St. John's team that had Eric Barkley and Bootsy Thornton. That was a St. John's team adjusting to life without Ron Artest, who had been drafted 8 months earlier. That's how long ago that was. That's the kind of history we're talking about. And what does that history sound like? It sounds kind of like this. Check out the audio on this video from the stands. Screaming from the stands. It sounds almost too good to be true. The OG himself, Thomas Walkup, retweeted that with the caption, quote, "The gasps, the screams of terror, the roar from the small section of purple. It's all beautiful," end quote. It is beautiful. It's perfect. It's just this side of, oh my God, this is not happening. Oh my God, this is not happening. Oh my God, this is not happening. Nathan Bain left Duke fans feeling like they just smashed 40 pizzas in 30 days.
40 pizzas in 30 days.
And left Duke haters feeling like they were on top of the world. Raise the axe. Finally, if you didn't know it, when a 25-point dog, Evansville, pooped in Cal's ice cream a few weeks back, now you know. A Stephen F. Austin, 27.5-point dog, just beat number one Duke in their house. There is no dominant team in college basketball. Not now. Maybe not the rest of the season. And it's going to make the tournament and the season itself awesome. Am I right, Cal?
There's a bucket of poop and there's a bucket of ice cream. You can put all the ice cream in that poop that you want. It doesn't change it. But one little pinch of that poop in that ice cream ruins that ice cream. And I'll tell a guy, you, my man, are the poop in our ice cream.
Bruce Smith. Bruce, it's nice to have you back on. How are you?
Jim, it's good to be back on, and haven't talked to you in a while. I just want to say happy Thanksgiving to you and all of your listeners.
You too, Bruce. Great to hear your voice, and so nice to have you back. I'm thrilled to talk to you, and there's so many things that we could talk about, especially as it relates to being the subject of a football life. But let me take you back, and I want to reference your Hall of Fame speech. It was 1985. You had arrived in minicamp, and you and Andre Reed, you see dark clouds off in the distance, and then within minutes, there's rain, there's hail, there's snow, Bruce. What was going through your mind when all of that was happening?
And then I said, what the hell have I gotten myself into? Yeah, I had never seen weather that extreme before in all of my life, whereas I saw rain, hail, and then snow come down all in a matter of 30 minutes, and then the sun came back out. But it was quite an experience and a wake-up call for me, and I got to tell you, it's a wonderful place to play football and be appreciated by all of your hard work and your efforts and your dedication to the game.
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Then don't make a shake. Don't eat a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. That's right, Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. And it goes wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach, anywhere at all. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you do not see it, be sure to ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? We're talking to Bruce Smith. He's a Hall of Famer. Bills Mafia, I know you're thrilled to hear that too. So your first season in Buffalo, the team goes 2-14, but you were there. Andre Reed was there. Daryl Talley was there. And the next year, Jim Kelly arrives. When did you start to get the sense that something really special could happen with this group?
Well, we started putting the pieces together, I believe, in that 85 draft. We already had staples like Daryl Talley and Fred Smirlis was there, and Jim Haslett and a few other guys that were mainstays for that team for a number of years. But then they understood they had to upgrade the talent at key positions. And obviously, the two most important positions on a football team is a quarterback and a pass rusher. By far, those are the two most important positions on a team. So once we started going down that road, we sealed Andre Reed in the draft in '85. We got Jim Kelly in I believe '86, '87. We got Marv Levy on board in 86, and then got Thurman Thomas. So we strategically put players on the team, as well as coaches and front office. We had already had Bill Polian, who really orchestrated putting this team together. And one thing started happening, and I think a few of the final pieces was the acquisition of Steve Tasker, who I feel is the greatest special teams player, all-around special teams player that has ever played the game, and Cornelius Bennett. Once we were able to put all those pieces together, we started gelling and coming together as a team, and we started learning how to become a pro under the leadership of Marv Levy, and that's when our career started taking off.
Hall of Famer Bruce Smith is joining us here in the jungle. Bruce, you mentioned Steve Tasker, and as part of the documentary, Tasker talks about how you grew into, quote, an icon, Mount Rushmore, a leader of men, a guy you could just get behind, just a completely different human being, end quote. That is amazing praise. What does it mean to you to hear a teammate talk about you with that kind of love and respect?
Yeah, it was very humbling, very humble, and I was honored to be able to be thought of in those terms. But it didn't come easy. There was a maturation process. I was a young kid. I was 20 years old when I was drafted. Actually, I was told 2 months prior to the draft that I was going to be the number one pick in the draft. So that was a foregone conclusion. When the draft actually rolled around, became an instant billionaire at the age of 20 years old. But I didn't know how to be a pro. I had so much to learn. I was green and wet behind the ears, and it was a process for me. And that process included my teammates like Daryl Talley. That process included Marv Levy teaching each and every one of us how to be a pro. I remember some of the childish and sometimes immature things that I would do, particularly when I sacked the quarterback my first and second year. I would dance over the quarterback and so forth. Well, that's not being a pro. It's okay to be excited. It's okay to show that you're enthused and so forth, but shortly after Marv came and he started instilling those kind of traits and behavior patterns within us, I started helping the quarterback up. But I'd tell him that I'll be back real soon. And those are the things that I learned under the leadership and the coaching of Marv Levy and general manager Bill Polian, and just learning how to be a professional.
Bruce Smith is a Hall of Famer. Bruce Smith, The Football Life, premieres Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network. You know, Bruce, as part of being a leader, I mean, I don't want to embarrass you with a bunch of stories from teammates talking about what you meant to them, but there is one more. Scott Norwood said that after he missed the kick in Super Bowl 25, you went to his hotel room and you told him, quote, "It wasn't you, Scotty," and you gave him a huge hug. Norwood said how much that meant to him. Why was that something that was so important for you to do?
Well, I just knew he had the weight of the world on his shoulders, and while most probably turned their backs and wanted to abandon him, that's not the time to treat a person that way. Obviously, you know, we would have wanted him to make that kick. Unfortunately, he didn't make the kick, and we have to live with the consequences. Having said that, we all could have done something, one play a little bit better, executed a play a little bit better. In my particular case, when I got that sack and the safety in the end zone, I got a 15-yard penalty for excessive celebration. So I looked upon myself in saying that I could have done something a little bit better to provide a better outcome for the game. And if we all looked at ourselves and thought of it in terms of what could we have done to change the outcome of the game so we wouldn't have been put in that situation, I think they would have felt the same way I felt. But I think the world of Scott Norwood, it's unfortunate he missed a kick, and that's probably what he will always be remembered by. But I'm a guy that I'm an optimist. I look at the cup as being half full instead of half empty. I think we had a historic team, one in which history has treated us kindly over the years.
And Bruce, I've always said this, and I was never trying to be flip. I mean, I meant this. I think it takes a hell of a good football team to lose four Super Bowls, and I mean that sincerely. That was a great, great team. Even if you didn't get that one, it takes a damn good football team to lose four Super Bowls. You know, let me ask you before you go about Jim Kelly. He comes on the show quite a bit. And one of the things that he's mentioned is the trips that some of you guys take. And there's that great story from a few years back. Before Kelly had his jersey retired, y'all got together in Sonoma. And at one point you said to him, "Jim, how do you get your jersey retired before us? You weren't even the best player on that team." And quote, he thought that was hilarious. He loved that, Bruce. What do you remember about that conversation? And what's it like when you guys do get together?
Oh man, I got to tell you, when we get together, we just think outside of the box and we rag on one another, and it's just that family type of atmosphere that you have that special relation and that brotherhood that exists, that you just enjoy the laughter and the moments and the trips to Sonoma, Napa Valley to go out and just spend some quality time with your teammates and so forth. But, you know, one point I would like to bring up before we wrap up.
You bet.
You know, shooting this football life was one of the most difficult times in my life, because the moment, the day that we were supposed to do this shoot, I found out that my best friend, one of my dearest and best friends in the whole world, was just hit by a car at 5 a.m. in the morning, and that was the champ, Pernell Sweet Pea Whitaker. We went to high school together. We grew up together, and I had to continue with the shoot. The shoot was supposed to start at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I couldn't get myself together because I was so distraught and I was heartbroken. But it was a very difficult shoot to get through, knowing that I had lost one of my best friends that I'd ever had in this whole world. And it's still, I still think about him every day. Every day that I drive down that street, I look over at that corner in remembrance of my dear friend, Pernell Sweet Pea Whitaker, the champ.
Bruce Smith, my guest. Bruce, since you mentioned that, before I let you go, Sweet Pea, he was such a great fighter. He was such a great fighter. And the fact that you guys grew up together, can you remember what was that time like when you guys were young and you had dreams of taking over the world and dominating your respective sports? What kind of thoughts and discussions would you guys have back in the day? What was it like?
Well, pound for pound, he was the greatest fighter in that era, and it was incredible. We never thought about taking over the world, but we thought of becoming the best that our sport had ever seen at that point in time. We knew where we came from, which was the inner city in Norfolk, Virginia. We knew the challenges and the obstacles that we faced and we overcame. We understood who we were representing in Norfolk, and it made us so proud to be from this area, and particularly Booker T. Washington High School, to have a world champion and an Olympic gold boxer coming out of that high school, and to have the number one player picked in the NFL draft coming out of Booker T. Washington High School. So we were representing the hometown, this region, and I just tell you, it was a bond like you've never seen before. When we get together, it would just be so much laughter and love that was spread around, not just between us, but people could see it and feel it and understood that this was real. This was as real as it could be.
Bruce Smith, A Football Life, premieres Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network. The NFL 100 All-Time Team Series continues Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern on NFL Network, and they're going to reveal the defensive linemen and linebackers who made that team. He's a Hall of Famer. Bruce, it is so good to get caught up. It is great to hear your voice, and I'm so glad we could have this time together. I really appreciate that, bro. Bruce, very much.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on, Jim. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Do you need a last-minute gift? Then give O'Reilly Auto Parts a call. They've got several options for gifts under $20, including a digital tire gauge, a 20-in-1 multi-tool, storage containers, or even a universal backup camera. Or you can get professional quality power torque tool sets starting at only $19.99. Plus, who doesn't love gift cards? You can even buy gifts online and then pick them up in the store. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. After putting his puppet, coach, on blast Sunday, and then not doing anything about it on Monday, Jerry Jones made his radio appearance yesterday. If you remember, Jera on Sunday, he was frustrated with the coaching staff, really frustrated, so frustrated that he did nothing about it. Then he did his weekly radio hit. So here's hoping that he at least said something about it, even if he wasn't going to do anything about it. And he did. Sort of. Not really. He just mumbled something about the weather. I mean, there were some interesting quotes, but mostly he just talked about the weather.
There's no question that disappointed is not the word. There's no question that given an opportunity, there were things that we could have taken advantage of, as there is in all games. But the other night, the name of the game was turnovers. The other night, the name of the game was weather. And then the other night, the name of the game was how to play that game in those circumstances. New England plays a lot of games in those circumstances. They coach their team to play games in those circumstances. They should. And you've got a very good chance when the weather becomes a factor to be sitting there coaching with up against an advantage, and that is a coach and an organization that works to take advantage of those situations.
So the name of the game was the weather. So obviously the weather affected them. So when asked whose decision it was for the Cowboys to practice indoors on Thursday and Friday, Jerry answered, quote, the head coach. And then he started to ramble on about this.
When you're general manager, of which I am, those coaches are out there at my ultimate decision. It's very much within my realm of purview, if you will, to basically not only be standing there as an owner, but be standing there as the general manager that put the staff together to begin with. People seem to think that it's particularly harsh to have criticism, and they think that when you look at the other side of the field and call a job well done, that might mean that's extraordinary criticism of the job that you've done over on the other side of the field, which is me.
What? What exactly is he saying right there? Like, where's he going with that? Did that make any sense to anybody at all? That he's not going to fire his coaches, but he's going to fire the general manager? I mean, what does any of that mean? Does that all mean that the blame does not go to the clapper, that the GM has to share in that blame. Is that what he's saying? Did he just put the GM on blast as well? Did he put himself on blast? Did he take a run at himself? Did Jarrah just put Jarrah on the proverbial hot seat? I mean, literally, what the hell does any of that mean? Why even say it other than to tell everybody, hey, yo, don't forget who the general manager of this team is. It's this guy. On any other team, if the owner is unhappy with the team's play but does not want to fire the coach, he'll break off the general manager. Except in this case, the owner is the general manager. And he doesn't want to fire either the general manager or the head coach, even though he could easily upgrade both of those spots if he did. And no, Jarrah, no. Nobody thinks that what you said about your coaches after the Patriots game was harsh. They're surprised it took you as long as it did to say what you said. But no, we were not at all surprised. Not surprised, only surprised that it took that long, but not at all surprised that you did nothing more than flap your gums. Now, you can make the point that there was no way he was going to fire Jason Garrett on a Monday with a game on a Thursday. A few of you Cowboy honks might try to make that point, but let's be real. Is that the real reason that Garrett still has a job today? Because they played on Sunday and they've got another game on Thursday? That's not it. Because Jason Garrett survived worse than this. Jason Garrett went 8-8 three straight years and kept his job. So I really don't think that the days of the week are really the thing. But Jarrah had more. Because you know how it's kind of weird and kind of complicated that the owner is also the GM? Even Jarrah will own that. He admits that is a little bit tricky.
Running one of these football teams, and when you run it the way that I do, and with the help that I've got, it's like holding two handfuls of Jell-O. And about the time you think you've got it corralled over on one part of your hands, it's coming out the fingers on the other.
Dude, incredible. This dude truly is the king. The king of the worst analogies ever uttered. Can't you just see this old dude running around the facility with handfuls of Jell-O? Trying to make sure none of it like goes between his fingers? You know he does, because that's one of his favorite lines. He runs that one out there with regularity. That Jell-O analogy is in high rotation. But as whack as his analogies go, that one's not terrible. But nowhere near the GOAT. You know, the one he uses to describe contract negotiations. You know, where he compares a contract negotiation to a fatal car accident where you could lose a limb, spurt blood, and bleed out in the woods. Kind of hard to hold Jell-O with a severed off hand. But the Jell-O line does underline the fact that it is really hard to do what he's doing. Right. Which is all the more reason why Jell-O Jarrah should not be doing it. I mean, it'd be one thing if the dude with the Jell-O in both hands was killing it and stacking Lombardis, but he's not. You don't need me to tell you that they've won three playoffs, or they have three playoff wins in the last 23 years. Not three trophies, three wins. So I'm not going to say that the Jell-O carrying experiment isn't working. If you don't have the right help, though, get more help. Or better help. Don't just say how hard it is to carry Jell-O. Man, put the Jell-O in its Tupperware where it belongs instead of putting it in your hands. If this is too hard for you, I can understand why it might be, then just find another GM. Don't carry the Jell-O with both hands. It's disgusting. Who's going to want to eat that Jell-O after you've had your hands all over it, Jarrah? And if you like that image of him running around with handfuls of Jell-O, you're going to love his answer about the analytics and the oil business, which included this line.
The reason the banks don't drill all the well is because they've assured the people that put the money in the bank they'll get their money back.
Yeah, I'm not sure I follow that either. In fact, I can't follow any of this guy's stuff anymore. The banks don't drill oil wells because they told their customers that they'd get their money back? Like, I don't want to get into the nuances of deposit insurance, but I thought the FDIC handled all that. And then how does that address the fact that Jason Garrett chose to kick a field goal down 7 with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter? Because what? Otherwise, you'd have to work at a bank? All in all, if you thought that Jerry was going to fire Jason Garrett after Sunday, you're begging. He might have been pissed. He might have been frustrated. He might have gotten jello all over his hands. And he really can't drill for oil and circumcise a mosquito right now, okay? Maybe Jason Garrett does get fired if they lose to Buffalo. Or maybe at the end of the season if they miss the postseason. Or maybe never. Because I'll believe that Jason Garrett is out of a job when Jason Garrett is out of a job and not a moment before that. Like Jerry Jones, he's got way too much jello on his hands and way too many bizarre metaphors that he can still run out there. If I didn't know any better, I think the old man must have been offended by Chunk's horrible boat sinking analogy on Monday and said, hold my jello. And watch this.
You ever been on a boat that's sinking? It's not happy. It's not pleasant. It's adversity. It's football.
It's like holding two handfuls of jello.
Jera. That's got that Zeke contract negotiation analogy looking brilliant. Man, stick to your players riding and spanking imaginary horses. Keaton Slovis. Keaton, good to have you on. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. So take me back to Saturday. You beat UCLA 52-35. What does the rivalry mean to you, and how important was it to take care of business the way you did and close out the regular season with that win?
Yeah, no, it was a big game for us. Obviously, we looked forward to it, you know, throughout the year. And, you know, when we finally got to it, we were really excited. And, you know, I'm really happy we walked away with the win.
All right, so in that game, you had four. You had four receivers with 100-yard games. I would imagine in getting ready for that game, you knew you'd have some opportunities. Did you ever think, though, on a day like that, you'd have four different guys go for 100 yards or more?
No, not really. I mean, those guys are, you know, the guys around me are real special. I mean, that's the thing. These guys at any point can all have a big game, and I guess it just happened that they all happened to have a big game on the same day. So I was really excited that we got to get them all involved on the same game, especially a big one like UCLA.
Hey, listen, I grew up in Los Angeles. I've been watching those games for years. I've never seen anything like that. Keaton Slovis is my guest. You know, I didn't want to start off by asking you about that record because I know that you don't want to make it about you, but I've got to ask anyway. There have been so many amazing quarterbacks who've gone to USC, so what's it mean to you to know that your name is on top of the list for most passing yards in a single game? I mean, does that feel real to you at this point?
Yeah, I guess it's still a little surreal. I haven't really had time to process it because I honestly didn't know I broke the record until someone in the huddle said, like, congrats. And I didn't really know what they were talking about because I didn't realize where the record was or I had any idea where it was at. But, again, you know, you look at that list and they're all guys I grew up watching play quarterback at USC. So, I mean, to be on the top of that list is really special. But, again, you know, I definitely wouldn't be there without the help of my teammates and those four receivers that had 100 yards themselves.
You know, the story about how you got to USC is really amazing. We'll get to that in a minute. And you've already mentioned a couple of times how good the talent is around you. When you've got four guys who go for 100 yards or more, obviously you've got some great, great talent. Let me ask you about Michael Pittman Jr. He's a finalist for the Biletnikoff Award. What makes him so unique, so special as a wide receiver?
You know, I think just his playmaking ability. And, you know, Pitt's just a guy. He's so ultra competitive. He works so hard. But you know, he's just a guy that, you know, he wants the ball in that one-on-one situation. He wants you to put it up there for him. And, you know, when I do, he goes up and gets it. So having a guy like that on the outside, you know, just makes my job a lot easier. And not to mention how good of a leader he is and what a great teammate he is. You know, he's really the whole package.
Now, at the same time, he's tough now. He's tough, and he'll let you know it. For example, earlier this season, he talked about the first time he saw you at practice. Keaton, the way he laid this out, he said, quote, I'd say that he's kind of a goofy-looking, skinny kid. Then he comes out, and he's got one of the biggest arms I've ever seen. He's kind of like a shocker, I guess, but he's bigger now. He's been in the weight program, so he's built up a little. So what's your reaction when he calls you goofy-looking and skinny? And then what's he like to play with?
No, it doesn't really surprise me. You know, Mike's a pretty funny guy. I think he's throwing a little low blow there, but you know, that doesn't surprise me either. I was a pretty small kid coming into the program. I remember feeling much smaller than everyone else. You know, but obviously this summer I've kind of prided myself on getting to a decent size, and hopefully this off season and throughout the bowl season I'll be able to get bigger too.
Keaton Slovis has earned it. He's joining us right now. I think a lot of people are familiar with your story, but there's a legend that back when you were a freshman in high school, you and your dad, Max, sat down and talked about your future and talked about what you wanted to do. At that point, the goal was to play college football and to start on Saturdays, but you didn't start your first two seasons in high school and you didn't go to a ton of recruiting events. What was your process at that point like?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of guys around me in the state, or I guess in Scottsdale, really, were getting a lot of attention. You know, Spencer Rattler was, I think, one of the number one or number two guys in the country. And, you know, he was already playing as a freshman. So there's a lot of noise and hype around me. But, you know, and obviously that kind of fueled me a little bit because I thought I was just as good as any of them. But, you know, my dad and I kind of sat down and made that goal. And, you know, I really credit him for keeping my head down and, you know, making me stay the course and you know, believe in my dream because, you know, it did work out for me, even though I didn't start till I was a junior in high school.
And that's what happened. As a junior, you take over as starter at Desert Mountain, but the story goes that you still weren't getting a huge amount of attention, despite the fact that you were putting up big numbers. And then you've got Brian Ellis, who's involved in recruiting at USC. He puts on your highlights and said, quote, "Good God, who is this kid?" End of quote. What was it like when you received the offer from USC, and what was it about the opportunity that made you want to commit there?
Yeah, no, it was surreal. You know, again, as a kid that, you know, didn't play until his junior year, I didn't think I'd have an opportunity to go to, you know, Blue Blood program, one that I love so much, like USC. So when USC offered me, you know, I kind of wanted to jump on ship as soon as possible and, you know, seize that opportunity. And obviously there were a lot of doubters and naysayers when I did that, but you know, I'm just glad I got my opinion this year.
Keen, what about that? I mean, there were doubters and naysayers. And there's so much talent at USC. It might be the sort of thing where it might have scared some other guys off. In fact, I know it did. But you showed up. You went to work. You battled for that job. How did you go about approaching that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, you know, going to the QB competition is you can't get caught up in the guys around you. Obviously, they're your teammates, and you know you're competing for a job. But, you know, I think you just need to focus on yourself and play your best because, you know, when you get caught up on how the other quarterbacks are doing or how they're playing, you know, then you're not playing your best. So that's kind of the way I went about it. And, you know, I just went and competed and did my best. And obviously I didn't win the job, but, you know, getting that number two spot, I think that was definitely attributed to that.
Keaton Slovis is my guest. Then the season opener, JT Daniels goes down with the injury. You come in. That's never the way you want to get on the field. And it's the kind of situation where the moment would be too big for a lot of people, especially following somebody like that. It didn't seem like that to you. Were you feeling pressure in that moment, or was that just another football game to you?
Honestly, no, not really. I remember telling someone I was much more nervous going into my first high school game than that game.
Wow.
But I think that was just a testament to, you know, the confidence I built over the summer and spring in that program. And, you know, I think that's really, you know, just the confidence that the coaching staff had in me and, you know, putting me in that number two spot in general where they could have put an older, more experienced guy ahead of me. I think that gave me a lot of confidence.
You know, Graham Harrell talks about how quickly you picked up that offense. What's it been like working with him, and how much have you grown as a quarterback in that time that you've had together?
Yeah, no, he's awesome. I can't say enough good things about Coach Harrell. I love playing his system, and, you know, he makes it real easy for you. And I think it helps that he was a player too, so he kind of can understand, you know, where you're coming from, especially in this offense. So, you know, he's a great guy to work for, and I love playing for him.
As I mentioned before I let you go, I have the heavyweight world champion Deontay Wilder coming up next segment, but Harrell likes to hand out a title belt and then give a Twitter shout-out to the winner. Back on November 2nd, he tweeted in part, quote, "Breaking news, by some miracle, Keaton Slovis has claimed his first title belt of the year," end quote. And by that point, you had been killing it. You had been putting up numbers on the field. So what's involved in winning the belt, and how good did it feel to finally get that thing?
Yeah, no, it felt great. So every, I guess, Thursday, we kind of had one of our lighter practices, but as the quarterbacks go and do their quarterback competition, which consists of, I think we have to, like, hit a cone off a trash can. We have to throw a ball, like, fade balls in a net and a bunch of stuff like that. But you have to hit the crossbar, I think it's another act. But there's a bunch of stuff we have to do. But at the end of the day, whoever has the most points takes home the belt. And I've been on a roll the past few weeks.
Yeah, you have, and you finally got what you had coming to you. So finally, let me ask you, outside the program, there's been a lot of talk about Clay Helton and his future. What's it been like for you as players to hear that, and what's he like to play for?
Yeah, no, I love playing for Coach Helton. Obviously, I had a great I'm just so thankful that he gave me an opportunity. You know, he really wasn't in it. And it's not easy for a coach in his situation to give a three-star, you know, an opportunity to go to your school. But, again, you know, there's a lot of noise that's always surrounding our program, and especially being in L.A., that's going to happen. So,
you know, I think regardless of what it is, we always try to keep our minds and our focus inside of the building and not focus on the outside noise.
You see, a quick follow to that, and I'll let you go, but that's true, especially at that program in this town. There's going to be that noise no matter what. But despite the distractions, you guys have all stuck together. What's it say then about the players in that locker room that you finished up the regular season by winning 3 straight in 5 of your last 6 despite all that noise?
Yeah, no, I think it just shows the mental toughness that our guys have, and you know, credit to our captains. They've done a great job. You know, a guy like Michael Pittman is someone who really bears a lot of that responsibility for keeping us focused and you know, allowing us to win and have a good second half of the season.
Contractors everywhere rely on Ferguson for a wide variety of specialty products, tools, supplies, and services. Access all this and more with the new Ferguson app, which allows you to order on the go, find your nearest location, and quickly scan product barcodes for easy reordering. With tools like this, it is no wonder why ordering with Ferguson is the easiest part of your hard day's work. Download today to get started. Anthony Kim. What I would give to see my guy again. Like, Jose Canseco could promise me a psychedelic safari where I could see all of those things. And I would still rather just run down my guy, AK. Now, if you don't know Anthony Kim, I feel badly for you. Even as happy as he'd probably be to hear that you do not know who he is, I still feel badly for you. Because Anthony Kim, to me, was and still is a legend of the golf world. And an even bigger legend in the disappearance world. As a quick recap, a quick refresher, he turned pro as a 21-year-old in 06. He won 3 times on the PGA Tour. He got as high as number 6 in the world rankings. He finished 3rd at the Masters in 2010. He was an international sensation. And he last teed it up professionally in 2012. And then he just vanished, just disappeared. Like, to me, the best thing in the sport was just gone. Poof. And then you got people like me who have never really gotten over it. Like, devastated. Because AK did not just disappear from the track. He disappeared from life. Like, you can't find this guy anywhere. To this day, nobody can find him. And when you do find him, it's for a few minutes or maybe a text message or two. And then he just vanishes. He's like a mirage. The word swag and steez fell laughably short when it came to AK. I mean, there really is no word to describe what this guy was on the golf course. He was a rock star with a butter swing and the belt buckle of a bull rider. He made Tiger Woods seem more devoid of a personality than what he already was. He was freaking Anthony Kim. He was intimidating. He was devastating. He had this swag about him. Man, he was fierce. There was nobody like this guy. And I don't see how there ever will be another guy like this guy. Because of that charisma, because of that personality, because of the way he played, because of the way he dated. And because of that, because we can't find this guy, the legend continues to grow as he goes farther and farther off the grid. So why do I bring this up right now? First of all, don't ever ask me that question. Why would I talk about AK? I'll talk about AK whenever I damn well want to talk about AK. Second of all, there is a reason. He's in the news. Kind of. Like, he's in the news the way he pops up in the news these days. Either somebody spots him for a second, or somebody tells an old story that nobody's heard before. And in this case, it's the old story that nobody's heard before. But it's a feel-good story. And it's a perfect send-off into Thanksgiving. The story comes to us via Golf Channel show Swing Expedition. And in the promo clip, the network tweets out AK's old swing coach, Adam Schreiber, talked about a time that he and AK went to lunch in Palm Desert. It was back in 08, and they were waited on by a server who was pregnant. According to his swing coach, Kim congratulated her on her pregnancy and said, "You and your husband must be so excited." The server responded by breaking down and telling AK that she was not married and that her boyfriend ran out on her to avoid becoming a father and that she was scared to have that baby on her own. A few months later, as the story goes, AK and his swing coach return to the same restaurant, and the server greets Anthony Kim with a huge hug and showed him a picture of the new baby. AK's swing coach asked him what was going on and why she greeted him like that. Anthony told him that back when they first met a few months before, after hearing her story about the deadbeat boyfriend, he left a tip of either $10,000 or $20,000. I can't remember. End quote. Anthony freaking Kim. Legend. Going with the 10 or 20 gur tip to help with the cost of raising a baby alone. As if this guy wasn't already the GOAT. How's that for a perfect story heading into a holiday of giving thanks? I mean, like, imagine it wasn't Anthony Kim that sat down that day at that table. Imagine she got the cat at her table instead. Not only would she have gotten stiffed, but Hank Haney would have had to pay for his own lunch. And the seals, too. It's an incredible story about AK. And I'm sure that that's a story that he's forgotten about, a story that he doesn't want out there, showing another side of AK off the track. Because, again, we know what he was like on it. My man was a force. Pat Perez talked about what AK was like and what it was like to go up against him in January when he was on Ep 66 of the Jim Rome podcast.
We almost got into a fight on the putting green in Colonial.
What happened?
We started jawing back and forth. We were throwing some race in there back and forth, you know. But we got bad, bro. It got ugly. This is right before we're getting ready to go tee. I don't know what the hell happened after that, but somehow we got cool, and we've been cool ever since. And I don't know, but he loved to jaw. He loved to run his mouth and this and that. And I just said, I'm not taking this anymore. And I fired back at him, and we fired back and forth. And I'm getting ready to tee off in 5 minutes, you know. And we left it at that, and somehow we came back, you know, about a month later, and we talked, and we were cool, and we've been cool for, you know, 5 years now.
That's a great story. Like, they were going to throw right there on the green. He was teeing off in 5 minutes. But that was my point about Anthony Kim. Anthony Kim will go. Anthony Kim absolutely will go. Besides almost fighting AK on the practice green, Pat Perez also told me that he does still talk to Anthony Kim and that it's a shame that he is not playing anymore.
I talk to him all the time. He always sends a message, how's the baby doing? That kid is fantastic. It is such a shame. I mean, it is an absolute shame because he is one of the most talented players I've ever seen play doing nothing. You know, he put in some time, but he loved to party and did all this shit. And this kid, his swing is as good as anyone I've ever seen swing the golf club. And the fact that he walked away from it, I asked him in Vegas a year ago. I said, bro, you got to miss it. I said, bro, you won a Ryder Cup. You won four times. I said, you were on your way and you were so young. You know, do you miss it? He goes, I don't miss it at all. I can't get over the fact if somebody was that good at something, you think they would do it a whole, you know. But the thing is, you can't give somebody love for the game, right? So it doesn't matter how good they are. If they don't love it, then they don't love it. You know, I don't think he loved it. I think that he knew he was amazing, and he had a total f*** you attitude. He didn't give a shit about, you know, anybody on the course. He had that tiger attitude, you know, where he wanted to kill you and he wanted to beat you, and you know, and that's just the way it was. He had unbelievable attitude for the game, and God, man, it's such a shame because we were just talking about him yesterday. We put a little tournament out here in Scottsdale, and somebody asked me about him. I said, "Bro, I just talked to him over Thanksgiving, and it is such a shame that he quit early because I think he would have had, I think he might have been the best player, you know, under 35 over amount of time. I think he would have won so many times. He definitely had a major type game to be able to win majors, and I think it's just an absolute shame that he didn't continue on with him."
That is an amazing answer. This is why I still talk about Anthony Kim, because other pro players still talk about Anthony Kim like that. And this reminds me that Pat Perez is not getting enough credit, not getting nearly enough credit as a personality. Another reason why I love that podcast. This is why I do that podcast. That was amazing. So the most recent chronicled sighting of AK, I think, was in West Hollywood back in April. The dude who found him is a correspondent for Golf Magazine, and he says that AK told him his golf game was, quote, non-existent. But at least AK isn't. What's up, big dog? Happy Thanksgiving, bro, wherever you are. Palm Desert, the Bahamas, Dallas. You never know where he is. West Hollywood. Brother, happy Thanksgiving.
Brother.
I hope I see you on iMessage sometime soon, legend. I will text him once or twice a year, and I've got a couple of telephone numbers for him, and I never know which one is the right one. And then sometimes it comes back, and he's always great. Like, how you doing, bro? How is everything? Okay, great. How about you? I feel like I'm texting Elvis. And then he disappears. So last night, Mavericks game, had a lot of hype, a lot of run-up, a lot of talk going into that game, a lot of build-up, lots of talk about the Mavs and their winning streak, a lot of talk about the Mavs averaging more than $1.40 in their last three games. A lot of talk about the fact that the Clippers had only won one game away from home. So what I'm saying is there were a lot of folks who were doing a lot of work trying to talk themselves into Dallas winning that game. And then the game itself happened, and Dallas looked rougher than their Fresh Prince of Bel-Air jerseys. Yo, Holmes, smell you later is right, because the Clippers came out looking to make a statement. Kristaps Porzingis said it after the game, quote, "They came into the game like, we want to beat their ass. They had a little more attitude than we did. Got punched in the mouth a little bit. On to the next one," end quote. The Clippers did look like and play like they wanted to beat some Maverick ass. So they went out and that's exactly what they did. 114-99. Dallas had been averaging more than 140 their last three games, and they didn't crack 90 until garbage time. So the Clippers blew out a team that was putting up crazy offensive numbers. Luka was coming in with four straight games of 30 points and 10 assists. Nobody has had an answer for him, except for the Clippers, because defensively, LA may have an answer for everybody and everything. Last night, the answer was for Luka, and the answer was get physical with him. Knock him around, run defenders at him, be really physical with him, and it worked. Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Pat Beverly, Mo Harkless, Roddy Magruder, they all took turns defending Luka. There's your nightmare fuel right there. Just some of these guys, no, one of these guys would be enough for most guys to wreck their night. But when you have to face all five of them, three of whom are absolute lockdown defensive stoppers, you know you're going to have a bad night. Man, those zombies, and that's what they are, those zombies do not die. You can't kill them. Zombies. Zombies. Whenever I think of zombies, the first thing I think of is Ronda Rousey. And the first time that I spoke with her, the first time that I met her, it was right in the middle of the whole Walking Dead thing. And zombies were like the biggest thing in the world. So when I met Ronda Rousey for the first time, and she and I sat down for an interview, I asked her about zombies. And this is before she had blown up and taken over the world of MMA. I knew the day that I met her that she'd be a star because she had this crazy it. She had this amazing charisma, and you could see it right away. And in the middle of that zombie craze, I asked her what her strategy would be for dealing with zombies, and she got off one of my favorite lines ever.
When the zombie apocalypse goes down, what is your survival strategy?
F***ing houseboats. Houseboats, man. It depends on the kind of zombies you're dealing with. You know, you could have slow all the time daytime zombies, or you could have sprinting fast nighttime zombies like in 28 Days Later. So I don't really know. It would kind of depend. I would lean more towards houseboat if it was like sprinting like nighttime zombies, because then you could just go out at night and then come back and chill in the daytime. And then you could just live on a boat and it'd be cool.
She was so awesome. And that, understand, that was before Ronda Rousey was Ronda Rousey. Like, she had not blown up yet. But I sat down with her, and she had this great, great it. I said, what would your strategy be? Effing houseboats. Back to Luca. What was that, Alvin? What did she say?
Houseboats.
Bleeping houseboats.
F***ing houseboats.
Back to Luca. Even if you could get past one of those lockdown zombies, he'd have to deal with the others who come over to help out, because there's always somebody helping out. Last night, George had 26 points, 6 steals in 29 minutes. Mavs coach Rick Carlisle said this about Kawhi and PG.
You got two wing players that are probably the most physical wing players and the most athletic wing players in the game. They're big, they're strong, they're highly skilled.
Right, and you can add to that, unfair. Having one guy like that on your team is a great advantage. Having two and then adding Pat Bev is cheating. It's too much. That will destroy any normal person, and Luka is not normal. I mean, don't look at last night's numbers. 22 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, and 7 turnovers. And tell me that this guy's overrated. He's not. He just ran into 3 of the best defenders in the association, and all 3 guys were locked in on him. Kawhi said, we knew what we had to do. We made a point of getting after this guy.
Wanted to do the best job we could on Luka. He's been killing it lately, playing at a very, very high level. You know, we just wanted to make it difficult for him tonight, get some deflections, and I think we were able to do that.
That's true. That's correct. It's also correct, as George said, that this guy's future is just crazy.
I mean, he's still a baby. He's got so much that he's going to grow, and, you know, he's really going to figure it out. And he's already doing, you know, amazing right now. So it's going to be scary when he fully figures it out and he starts to, you know, really hit his prime.
And speaking of scary, the Clippers are going to be scary. In fact, they already are. Right now, they're just scratching the surface of who they can be as a team. They're 4-0 with Kawhi and PG in the lineup, but that's still a work in progress on the offensive end, even on the defensive end. Because after that lockdown performance, George said he still feels like there is lots of room for improvement. Quote, we're becoming one of the best defensive teams in the league. So that tells me they feel like they can be even better. And when that happens, look the hell out. When they figure it all out and they get into a rhythm at both ends, you can cancel Christmas. Speaking of Christmas, the Clippers players have got that covered as well because for some reason, former NBA player Nick Young was tweeting about Christmas gifts last night. And invaluable sixth man that he is, Lou Williams came right off the bench to immediately heat up and provide the solution. I'm not going to read either tweet on the air because I can't, but you can find them if you want to. And if you do find it, do not tell me about it. I've already seen it. I don't need to hear it from you. I would rather talk about the Papa's 40 pizzas in 30 days than lose 12 days of Christmas. In the meantime, I think I want to start the 3 days that were because they were amazing, Alvin. Welcome to the program. My name is Jim Rome. A tremendous Monday to you. What's up? How was your weekend? We got ourselves a short week. Let's make this one count.
Make it count. Yeah!
Touchdown, Dennis Kelly. And it's a big man TD.
Chug it down, big man. And the only thing better than a big man TD is another big man TD.
Touchdown, Vita Vea.
Let the big dogs eat. I mean, how smooth is that big man?
Kittle on a diagonal to the 10. Inside the 5. Touchdown.
If my ankle is bark, it's flaking off, or I've got a pop capsule, man, I'm lying down and taking a long nap.
Welcome back, George Kittle.
Kittle's that kind of monster, and the 49ers are too.
To learn that playbook, to
Can we interrupt your open to discuss Gronk's latest appearance on TV? I think his Sports Clips haircut and his turtleneck is a good look. Signed, Tim Duncan's designer threads.
Yo soy fiesta.
Thanks to John in New York for scoping every minute of it. Although following Hawk into the bathroom and Elvie into the bedroom might have been a little over the top. There's this thing called personal space, loser.
Frank Gore, he is the third all-time.
The guy just ran right by Barry Sanders. The guy's a Hall of Fame lock. So keep this guy's name out your mouth if you can't put respect
keep
on
him. Keep my name out your mouth.
It's a bad take.
For those people that are turning a blind eye to him, they should just turn around and watch a different sport.
Gabe Kapler.
Put in a box of old school or new school, analytic or gut feel. I just don't think it has to be one or the other. I just want you to know that I don't identify as any one thing.
You know, make it a 4-point game if they go ahead and kick
it. I'm sure your guys really appreciated the confidence you showed in them on 4th and 7. Doubt that guy was not going to go for it. Didn't even anybody anywhere think he was going for
it? I felt good about that decision at that time.
There may come a time when Jones actually does something about his favorite ginger, but I'll believe it when I see it. Charles Davis back for more.
I think that probably stuck in Jerry's craw a little bit yesterday to watch his team lose another one.
I shouldn't be this frustrated.
And again, New England, for the last couple of weeks, they're for the taking.
Janet texted.
Excellent.
Poor Adam. You're brutal on him.
She's so sweet. She's so nice.
Ike's like, why didn't she take up for me?
There was an advertisement from Ross Dress for Less that are selling electric guitars on Black Friday.
I honestly really didn't understand any part of that call.
Touchdown!
Even the final score, 45-6, does not capture the complete and total humiliation that Lamar Jackson just inflicted on the LA Rams.
LJ, MVP.
Lamar Jackson, MVP.
He's an MVP for a reason.
Is this the beef jerky segment?
It's so hard to watch the Bengals every Sunday.
If I were the Buffalo Bills, I would honestly not play a lot of the starters.
Or even the dog crap everywhere.
People who abuse GoFundMe. You want to do a backflip off the rooftop onto a fiery glass table. I'm sorry you survived.
Herm Edwards is joining us.
Well, I've never been involved in the fan storming, obviously. And one time we won a championship game in Philadelphia, it got close to that. But, you know, those Philadelphia policemen are pretty, they're pretty tough.
I'm alone and I'm old. But guess what? I'm tough. I took that table.
Old woman strength. She beat the living hell out of this dude. Who the hell needs a gun? You've got two of them dangling from your 82-year-old shoulders. Will Healy is my guest. Was there a hotter, more electric club in the country than Club Lit?
Absolutely not. The price tag on Club Lit right now is rising by the minute. Lots of people waiting at the door.
Day of reckoning will come.
This is not about how he looks. This is not about how he sounds. The real story here is he murdered 40 pizzas in 30 days.
40 pizzas in 30 days.
And apparently he did so to test it for quality. And he said that it's not good.
Not good.
Mike Hopkins.
Having a guy like Larry Brown come in and watch over your practices and tell you what he's saying is just incredible.
There's a carpet and there's a cat, and the cat crapped on the carpet and it wrecked my carpet. There's no way that was Cody the Ragdoll cat. That had to have been Sapphire.
Sapphire.
You have a big dump in your
carpet. Bruce Smith, how do you get your jersey retired before us? You weren't even the best player on that team. He thought that was hilarious. He loved that, Bruce.
Oh, man, I got to tell you. We get together. We just think outside of the box.
It's like holding two handfuls of Jello.
Don't carry the Jello with both hands. It's disgusting. Who's going to want to eat that Jello after you've had your hands all over it, Gerald?
It's disgusting.
From the time that Tina Yothers was show fodder.
Not only radio pros, we're radio Hall of Famers. We know the clock. We can hit our posts. Unfortunately, some people ran long. She ran really long, and they cut her mouth. Imagine she got the cat at her table instead. Not only would she have gotten stiff, but Hank Haney would have had to pay for his own lunch. And the Seals, too.
He has not killed us.
This is Cliff.
A little low blow there.
Go Broncos.
I get it next time.
What if there isn't a next time? You do know you play for the Redskins, right?
Same to you and yours, Jim.
You ever been on a boat that's sinking?
Get well soon, fat boy!
What the heck is that?
Whoa!
Take out the trash.
Stay tuned.
You have a happy Thanksgiving as well, okay?
Happy Thanksgiving, too.
You are a beast, Jim Rohn. Good night now!
The 3 days that were.
Good night now!